right, things are good, back in the world again as they should be. All right, let's get Tommy in here. Tommy, come on back in here. Come on. All right.
Sunshiny day, John.
Yep, Dory's back on the air.
I heard.
Yeah, he said something nice about me.
That I didn't hear.
Yeah, Sean told me that. He's trying to drag me down. What do you say, Sean? Something nice?
Yeah, Dory had some complimentary things to say about you, but I'd recommend people listening to his podcast that's posted right now at CairoRadio.com.
Okay, did he say anything about Tom?
No, I don't think he did.
Hit the podcast plug again.
CairoRadio.com, MyNorthwest.com. We have so many websites for one site.
Diving in the news! Alrighty. Wow. Look at this. Like, the stories just kept tumbling down over and over and over, and that's why we got to get a Hannah Scott in here. There we go. Get in here, Hannah. Hey, Scott, this seems like a story you did just last week, talking about homicides and assaults and increasing, and it's the highest it's been in like 11 years or something like that. What's the news story on this? Did you already beat everybody to this?
No, this is a different story. It's just new numbers that are out, basically. So this is from Dan Zetterberg, the King County prosecutor, and they have a program called Shots Fired, where they essentially track every shot that's fired in the city that's related to anything criminal. So it doesn't necessarily mean it always hits someone, but they get that information from really the large police agencies in King County. And so they release the information quarterly. They've been doing this for a few years. And when we talked about it, we were kind of late and we talked about the prior quarter. So now we're talking about the new quarter. So the first 9 months of the year. But still the trend continues, right? The overall, there's been 767 criminal shots fired and shootings are up across the board.
All shots fired, but the more concerning thing is the number of people who've been hit. So we've had 59 people die so far this year through October from firearm violence, and that's up almost 60% over our three-year average. So it's statistically significant, and it's quite disturbing.
And here's the breakdown of those involved.
Of the 256 people who were shot so far in 2020, 90% were men, 41% were under the age of 25, and 74% were people of color. Now, these numbers are similar to the numbers that we've had for the last 3 years, only there's just more of them.
And as far as what's to blame?
We know that, you know, right now is a time of great stress and anxiety and uncertainty and depression, and that the COVID pandemic has amplified all of the conditions that lead to someone to decide to use violence. And violence is an emotion, and these are very emotional times.
So the other thing that he was happy about is right now the King County Council is going over the King County Executive's proposed budget, which, you know, and as he pointed out there, a lot of these are in communities of color, which is normally the case, but it's really amplified this time. And there's a big historic investment being proposed by the King County Executive in his budget to invest in, I think we've talked about this before, the mentoring kind of groups to try to get to kids before they get to guns and make them feel like they have other options and hope and someone to talk to, that kind of a thing. So there's really a historic investment on the table for that he's hopeful will maybe make a dent in this. And then at the same time, they look at where these shots fired are tracked and they see where they're kind of clustered, and then they go and they don't release this information publicly, but they know that they kind of go out into that community and they get to know the kids in that particular community, and that's how they try to get them into the mentoring before they've even done anything, if that makes sense.
So John, I've got a quick question.
Sure.
This makes no sense to me, and I think Satterberg kind of acknowledges it, but that the shooting incidents only rose 15%. It rose 15%, the shooting incidents, but the number of victims who were fatally shot jumped 58%, and those injured but survived rose 34%. That makes, statistically, that's bizarre. Does that just mean that every shot that was fired was more on the mark than it used to be?
No, it's because they don't just track shootings doesn't shots fired and each shooting doesn't necessarily represent someone trying to shoot someone else. It can be, you know, you shot a gun in the air. It's just a shot being fired. So it's not always that it's aimed at someone. It's
I know, but that only went up 15%. Does that mean that so normally we shoot a lot just randomly into the air, not at people? That's just an odd statistic. If you'd expect if the incidents rise 15%, then you'd have maybe 20% or something. This is 58% more people died and 34% actually were hit. I don't know. I just
I see what you're saying.
You know, I found it interesting. I read the part about they're not sure why this is. I know this audio sounds a little funky, but they're not sure why the numbers have gone up, and they're blaming it on stress and health and COVID. So I looked at a really interesting study that Washington Post had. They looked at 27 cities, and they followed all the homicides and violent crime from January up. When the lockdown occurred in white neighborhoods, crime dropped 30%. In black neighborhoods, it stayed relatively the same and rose. And then when the lockdowns were over, the crime rate spiked again dramatically. And they don't think it's about COVID. They really thought it was more about what had happened in Minneapolis. So it's not really about the stress and strain and this other stuff. They can't figure out why it is. The crime just continues anyway. It really is more directed towards the idea of anti-policing and just general lawlessness that's created in one small section. So it, but they in this piece from the Seattle Times, everyone sort of holds their hands and then, well, I guess it's about, it must all be COVID related.
Well, and I'll tell you that, and I've talked to Dan Satterberg about this when I talked to him about the last quarter results that came out, and he says, you know, he's the first to tell you he can't say why all of these are necessarily happening. He theorizes that it's possible that there's the stress from COVID, and it's, you know, times are difficult for everyone for the variety of different reasons for emotions. But part of that emotion is also, what's driving the protests? What's gone on since the killing of George Floyd? There's no shortage of rage in communities of color, for sure, right now, and I think that could be the possibility too.
But the rage is not being felt by the people that are shooting one another. The numbers stay exactly the same. Mm-hmm. It's 80% black, 80% 80% male, and in most cases, it's almost the same demographic shooting the same demographic.
Yeah,
and that has stayed consistent, and that has been consistent. So to blame it on COVID or to say that, oh, it's about the pandemic and it's the reaction to the pandemic, the numbers don't hold that to be true. The numbers simply reflect that there is a growing pathology of violence that continues in communities of color, and the communities of color are most disadvantaged by depolicing, most disadvantaged by people saying, well, it's something else other than it's the problem where it's some kid down the street shooting and killing another kid. The numbers have stayed the same, basically, even during the whole COVID thing, whole lockdown thing. That's in 27 cities across the United States, including Seattle.
Right. So, and I'll give you that. And, you know, again, he didn't necessarily, he said it could be the result of the COVID stress. But then also, as I said, he's very much, because I said, how do we solve this? How do we deal with this? And he's very much got his eggs in the basket of that county executive proposal to really increase the funding, historic levels of funding for these groups that have proven success getting in on the mentoring and keeping those kids in communities of color from pulling weapons and shooting one another. You know what I mean? So that's that's what his solution is at the moment. But I would agree with you. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to do are you here to talk about the law enforcement union push?
Yes.
There,
that ballot? Yeah. Yes. Okay, yes. There. Yes. Wow. Okay. So this
is going to be all Hannah all the time. Here we go.
All Hannah all the time. Yeah. This came out yesterday. This is the Seattle Police Officers Guild and Washington Council on Sheriffs and Police, and then the King County Corrections Union, I believe. And it's they came out with a new group called Team Blue Washington. And what they are doing is pushing a ballot initiative. They're frustrated with the lack of kind of addressing all of the protests that we've seen over several months here in Seattle and other places. So they're pushing a statewide ballot initiative. Attorney Ryan Lufkin is with Team Blue Washington and says the initiative would require cities and counties to create and enforce a comprehensive plan for handling protests.
And in that plan, the act would require certain minimum standards. And we've tried to address issues that we think are important to both the protesters and to the community. These are things like a prohibition on burning things down, a prohibition on public and private vandalism, a prohibition on blockading streets so that others can't use them.
Now, they also tried to include things in the initiative that the protesters side would want.
Plan requires that officers wear some form of identification so complaints can be levied against them. It requires that the locality describe what kind of munitions would be used in a crowd control event and when they might be used. It requires them to describe when an event might be declared an unlawful assembly.
So those are the minimal standards, both of those cuts that you just heard, that because each county and city would be able to come up with their own plan. The key would be, though, they'd have to follow it once they've got that on the books, and it would have to include all of those things at a minimum. And cities and counties would have to enforce these plans that they create, or else.
Empowers the community to sue if their leadership abandons them. So right now, it's very difficult to sue a city or a county for doing things like, for example, abandoning an entire neighborhood to be blockaded by demonstrators and not enforcing the rule of law in that neighborhood. People are trying. I believe they're in federal court right now to try. But we want to make it simple, straightforward. If your leadership has abandoned you, you deserve to be able to sue and seek redress for that harm.
Okay, so that's it. That's what they want, right? They're going to lay out all this stuff. Can't burn this, can't break that, can't like this. But you're going to be able to sue. I think it's an easier path to try to go after a local government.
And how so? What would you do?
Well, because they're going to establish this thing, like, look at all this stuff. Here's what we're going to do. That's just all sort of window dressing. We're going to do this, and we're not going to use this. We're going to use this, and we don't want you to burn down this. And then it's going to be easy for the citizen to be able to come back and say, here's a clear line where the city violated this, this, and this by not providing these services to me, so therefore I'm going to be able to sue you.
And they're going to sue the city, and that's what he's talking about.
Yes,
because there's the one lawsuit right now that he was referencing in federal court from the folks who were up in the CHOP area. But he says otherwise, you know, nothing has been done. There's nothing he and I talked about. I think I've said on your show, I've been in at least three protests where the same Starbucks was, you know, lit on fire and all the windows smashed three different times. And he says it's those kind of people who have nothing working for them. They, you know, that happens. They patch it back up. They open back up, and it gets smashed again. And the city doesn't do anything because there's no clear policy. Not just in Seattle, but it's kind of scattered. The overall policy. There's some state law. There's some local law, and there's nothing kind of all in one place. So that's the idea behind the initiative, and it would be to, as he put it, have some common sense to restore order that really is about protecting free speech and the right to protest, but also making sure that, you know, neighbors don't have to listen to loud noise and people marching through the neighborhood at all hours of the night and things like that.
I see.
It seems.
Tom laughed.
Why no?
I know.
Wildly ambitious, I'll give him that. It also seems ultimately unbelievably impractical and unwieldy. Because every little city and community is going to have these new rules, and the people running out. No, the rule says you can't protest after 10 o'clock. It's 10:01. I understand the frustration of the people behind this, but even the people behind this, Ryan Lufkin is quoted in the Times saying, well, I know most of these things are already against the law, but
yes,
it's not really being enacted, and so we thought maybe this would give it, you know.
That's why the part two, where if you don't enforce it, cities and counties, then you can
there
be sued.
You go.
And that's
I
the
know.
Idea, because there's
and
nothing.
Go ahead.
There's nothing happening right now. And the other thing is, he said, look, this isn't about a pro-cop initiative. It's not about any of that. It's about we need to get to whatever the next step is. Here, we'll make our move. If you've got a better idea, let's talk about it. That's the way he put it to me.
Okay, finally, do you want to take care of Inslee and the COVID-19 vaccines?
Sure. I have. So Governor Inslee came out today, did a press conference, and we had our vaccine plan for the state. It was released, I believe it was like a week ago. And now we have a new plan that has to do with partnering with other states. Jake.
So today we are pleased to announce that we are joining our Western States PACT partnership on reviewing the safety and efficacy of COVID-19 vaccines when they are approved by the FDA. This will be an added layer of assurance and of an expert review that will help Washingtonians and others in Western states have greater faith and greater confidence in the vaccine so that we can increase the number of folks who actually get the vaccination. And of course, that's imperative if, in fact, we are going to beat this pandemic.
So essentially, this is something that Gavin Newsom did first, I think on the 19th of this month. He announced he was going to have these people in his state, scientists, researchers, and doctors, do an extra look, see at whatever the final vaccine is that's available, and just make sure it's safe, because perhaps the federal government might be rushing things a little bit. We just want to make double sure. So now our state has joined in with several other states, actually, in the western part of the country that are going to be a part of that. No one state has more control over any other. And I asked the governor today, he said, I said, is this going to delay the availability of a vaccine for everyone in Washington? He said, maybe a few days. So
is okay. This basically, this feels unnecessary to me.
Oh,
but my
yeah.
hunch is, my hunch is this is just kind of a, we don't trust the Trump administration's FDA.
There you go.
Is that
politics,
right?
Tom?
Yes,
politics.
Exactly. Okay, I'm just double checking. And then one last question,
sure.
In the front. Why isn't Idaho part of this?
Because they're sending everyone to our hospitals in our state.
So this is the governor is gonna, assure us that the vaccine is safe, and then. Will he deliver the vaccines to Eastern Washington with a box of apples that are infected by maggots? Will he also be doing,
because
he understands safety and he's a smart guy. He's a smart guy and he follows science. So I just figured that's the kind of person I want to lead, the man carrying a box of maggot-filled apples. So
Eastern Washington doesn't
nice
want
gesture.
The vaccines, John.
Yeah, it's nonsense, Hannah. It's nonsense. Please.
Okay.
All right, get out of here with your nonsense. Bye, Hannah. How about you, Tom, poking holes in two of Aunt, Hannah's stories? You're right. I heard you laugh out loud when she goes, what did the guy say? Things that you're not allowed to burn?
Yeah, right. I want a list.
Right.
Buildings, no go.
Oh, my. All right. All right, let's check traffic. What's going on out there? Oh, here we go. Q Mortgage 1, AAA, 778, K and an I, and an E and an L. That's Q Mortgage. Those are the people you want to get in touch with. Man, I'm telling you, if you're out in the market looking for a house, slim pickings. Get the pre-approval letter from Q Mortgage and make sure that they let you know. You letting everybody know you're working with the best mortgage company anywhere around. Thank you, Keel Mortgage. 1-888-778-K. I think the music stopped. I-E-L.
John, I never know what to do. I never know what to do with you.
We just work. We work together. It's a symbiotic relationship. You and me, we just kind of back and forth, six shooters and eye contact.
Yeah, love it.
There you go. Tom, you still there?
Of course I'm here.
Okay, just wow, you're in a relaxed mood. Are you sitting back? Or are you still leaning over the microphone like a hungry man eating a bone?
During the commercials, I lean back, and then when I hear your lovely voice, I lean forward.
Lean forward. Okay, good. Study regarding how children are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. A couple of years ago, the government stepped in, actually a while ago, right? And they said, you know what? We're going to cut down on the number of commercials that show up in kids' Saturday morning cartoons, those really sugary cereals that mm-hmm. we used to feast on as kids. Come to the Honeycomb Hideout. It's like, yeah, I want to go there to the Honeycomb Hideout. And the government shut that down. But now kids are still having commercials brought to them via what, Tom?
Well, the internet, and more specifically, uh-huh. YouTube. I found this informative. I don't have young kids, so I was unaware of the fact that there are these things called kidfluencers. Fluencers. Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't exactly roll off the tip of your tongue. But there are these channels that kids kind of operate. They have their own show, and they feature this one particular kid named Ryan. Mm-hmm. And the danger with Ryan, so it's basically a kid. He's a 9-year-old kid. And what he does is he eats products and he plays toys and he just watches things, does things that kids might be interested in doing. And he talks about, wow, you know, like, look at this cheeseburger from McDonald's. I just bit into it and all that juicy, you know, the flavor and the ketchup. I mean, he basically does commercials for
right.
McDonald's. And
as compelling as your imitation of that kid is, Tom.
Yes, good.
Jacob, do we actually
audio?
Have it?
Perfect. Yeah,
get ready, better. Kid. You might hear this, kid. He might influence you. Hold on.
Welcome to Ryan Toy Review. Hi, today we're going to play with McDonald's toys. Reading Cookie Monster and Mickey Mouse.
Ooh, they're right over there. They're waiting for their food.
And look, Cookie Monster loves cookies.
Oh, yeah. So we got this awesome McDonald's cash register. Ooh, and we're going to try to feed them. Let's see what they want.
Mickey Mouse, what would you like to eat today?
Okay.
Let's see. There's so many food on the breakfast menu.
That kid is nine? He sounds like he's four.
I like what you did, the kid voice, better.
Well, the question...
Eating products. Boy, Tom, you really know how to sell something. Here's another product I'd like to eat.
I'm not trying to sell it, and that makes me the poor kid on the block. The question is, are these kidfluencers making our kids fat? And the answer is a duh. So they start up. There's been obviously we've been talking about this for years, but a 20% increase in kids obesity from the mid 70s. So when we were kids and all, and what the strong link between junk food marketing and childhood obesity is practically a given at this point. And so they talk, this Ryan kid, he gets paid to do these. There's no indication that he's in the employ of McDonald's, but he gets paid to promote Chuck E. Cheese, Walmart, Hasbro, Lunchables, Hardee's, Carl's Jr., all of these kinds of fast food things that he's promoting, along with all these other toys and stuff. He made $26 million yesterday for that dang show of his on the internet, on YouTube. It's absolutely fascinating. They say it makes some sense way before the internet was invented. Congress came up with what you were talking about, where you can restrict the kind of pitches to kids, because up to the age of eight or nine, they say kids really can't tell the difference between a commercial and the show that they're watching. So it all just fuses into one big reality. And is this a disservice? We now restrict it, and we have for decades now, restricted access to sugary cereals and that kind of stuff on commercial TV. But because the laws were written before the internet even existed, none of this applies. And so the question is how best to deal with this.
I saw a study regarding kids' obesity. They looked at American children and kids in the Amazon. I mean, the real Amazon, running around, hunting, gathering, all that stuff. And they found that almost the same amount of calories are burned between the Amazon kids and the U.S. kids. So then they just said, well, because you can't get to a certain point, you can't keep burning calories. Your body stops burning calories and becomes less efficient, and your metabolism changes. They said it really is. It's the type of food choices that are made. So as much as they want to get the kids up and off the couch, it really is more about foods that are eaten as opposed to activity. They're encouraging the activity, but really it's about what goes in your mouth. It's all those products those kids are eating, Tom. That's the problem
test with Oreo cookies, Pop-Tarts, Ben and Jerry's ice cream, sitting in toy cars, ordering fast food at these drive-thrus. I mean, it is. I don't see what the problem would be in just extending the law and say, okay, you know what? Let's sort of restrict this. The other tricky thing is these kids, they never have to announce if they're getting paid or not. It would be one thing. You know, people just put stuff up on the internet all the time on YouTube. Say, oh, man, I just tried the new this or that. If you're not getting paid, if you're not a paid spokesman, that's one thing. But if you're actually paid it, you at least ought to be upfront about the fact, McDonald's just paid me a fortune to say this cookie tastes good. It still tastes good, but you got to know.
Jacob's young, Tom. Let's see if he felt some sort of affinity to that youngster. Did you feel as if he was influencing you in any way, Jacob?
I'm got maybe a little bit hungry, but that was just because, I mean, he shows the logo, and so that made me think of food.
Okay, and?
That was the end of my
John, I think, why don't you talk about your kids? You should agree with this, that this is a bad thing. The way you taught your kids how to react to McDonald's, I think, is a lesson we all can learn from.
Every time we drive by it, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, it's killing me. I taught them that song, and then we used to feed them only kale. Kale was their big treat, and we would grind up kale and freeze it, and then we had kale pops. They had no sugar until the age of three.
And now
they had never tasted man-made sugar. And when we go to parties, birthday parties, we would send, this is awful, we would send our kids to other kids' birthday parties with their own special cakes, which was made of like mung bean and millet and like some weird thing that kind of tasted sweet, but not really. So the other kids are eating, you know, birthday cake, and our kids were eating special cakes that they had brought with them. So
you were strict.
We read a book called Super Baby Food, and we made all of our own baby food for 3 years. And they walked around the neighborhood eating kale pops. And other kids are like, ooh, those look good. Can I try?
I think it's brilliant that you convince your kids that anybody in line at McDonald's is doing something awful. Y'all look down at food.
You're trying to kill me. Didn't scan as well. All right, Tracy Taylor. All righty. All right, one more cord of wood, Tom, and I'm all set for the winter. I've got three stacked, and they're drying, and they're right near the house. I sent Jacob some video. I went out to Ellensburg to the farm store, where I feel like a fish out of water, like a eunuch at a strip club. Everyone there is so unbelievably manly, and me not so. And the guy who was helping me, a young kid, recognized me from Evening Magazine and said, are you going hunting? Because hunting season has started, as you know, Tom, 12 days ago. And I thought he said, are they going hunting? Meaning the guys I was with.
Yeah.
And I went, yeah. And then he says, what are you going for? And I didn't have the heart to tell him I wasn't going for anything, that I wasn't going hunting. And I went, going.
Grizzly.
Going for deer. Deer.
For deer.
I thought, okay. I'll play it safe, right?
Safe,
and then he goes, what are you hunting with? Now, I don't know what I'm hunting with. All I know is that you have to shoot them, but I don't know. And I went, so I'm thinking the only bullet I know is the .223. Uh-huh. So I said, probably .223. And he went, a .223? And I said, yeah. And then I realized, oh my God, now I'm like in a hall of mirrors. I can't get out. I'm like running to the counter to try to not have to continue this conversation. I'm carrying a great big heavy pipe, and he's got the other big heavy pipe. So the two of us are walking together with the big heavy pipe, and we've got the conversation going. And now I'm shooting a deer with a .223. And he goes, where are you going to try to hit it? And I went, realizing probably the .223 is too small. And I went, I go for the eye. And he goes, like, the side of it. And I said, he goes, well, it'll go right through the other eye. I said, I blind them first, and then I finish them off with a knife. I was like, what? And Dougie, who was standing next to me, goes, what are you talking about? And I was like, I just telling him how I hunt deer by blinding them first and then killing them with a knife.
Did you tell him about the frying pan?
I said, I'll be out of the truck. So I like run out there, and then I hear them talking about me. I said, do I go back in and defend myself or just leave it with the image of the blinding deers and then cutting them with a knife? Oh my God. You're better off just simply, you know, admitting that you know nothing.
Yeah.
Go in there and write. But I got the shoes and the pants, and I bought a Cartwright. I bought Cartwright pants that I think are made out of asbestos. The things are so hard you can barely walk.
I see.
In them.
So you're dressing the part, but you're an actor.
Right.
You're not a real
embodiment
of that outfit.
But when I did get to the car, I looked up best ammunition to deer hunt with. So. It's not the .223. That's you hunt squirrels with that, Tom. Squirrels. You shoot the squirrel through the eye, and then stab the squirrel.
I just like scaring the deer. Run away! Run away!
Oh my God!
Shot him with a BB gun. That's good.
Terrible. Oh, Lordy. All right. Well, I'll learn my lesson and not to go back there again. I don't want to see that kid. Holy moly. All right. Tracy Taylor, what's that?